Welcome back to the Locked On Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Thornton. I am joined by my trusty steed, Zach Goodall, who is still under the weather, if you listened to our episode this morning. And we are joined by Terry Lambert of Locked On Titans. Terry, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, and it's a big week, I guess, for both teams. The Titans getting their first win of the season last week against the Houston Texans. Another win this week would put them 2-0 in the division and put them in the lead of the AFC South, as well as the Jaguars, which is a big week for. They are 2-0 right now after a huge win over the defending AFC champions, New England Patriots. But a win this week would put them 3-0 on the season and their first win in the division. So there is a lot at stake for both teams, obviously, going to the week, and we will go over all the matchups in this episode of Locked On Jaguars. But I will kick it right over to Zach. Zach, what is the first intriguing matchup that you are looking forward to in this game?
I think it'll be a big test for this Jaguars offensive line with a backup left tackle taking over the reins on the left side in Josh Wells, who struggled in pass protection, and we broke that down on today's pod. Going against what appears to be a sturdy Titans defense and a better pass rush. Obviously, they have guys that have been in-house for a while, like Brian Arakpo, Jarrell Casey on the inside, as well as adding Harold Landry, Rashawn Evans in the offseason as well. They've definitely boosted their ability to rush the passer. And with a guy like Josh Wells, who allowed 7 pressures in just over three quarters of football against the New England Patriots, who are definitely not known for their pass rush, I'm a little bit worried about exactly what will happen there.
Well, I'll tell you, from the Titans' perspective, we've been begging for pass rushers for years. Brian Arakpo, Derek Morgan, they're nice players, but they're more, you know, 8 sacks a year type guys, not true difference makers. So finally you have a chance to get younger. For some reason, the NFL lets Harold Landry drop into the second round and the Titans grab him up. And I think it's going to transform this entire group. He missed some time in preseason with an ankle injury. So he made his debut last week. First rep of his NFL career, he got pressure, collapsed the pocket, and created a sack for Jarrell Casey. So, didn't show up in the box score or anything like that, but I think Harold Landry is going to be a problem for the rest of the AFC South. Really explosive, lots of bend there, and they're going to play him in situations like those third and longs, clear passing downs. They're going to take Brian Arakpo off the field. They're going to take a Derek Morgan off the field, or maybe throw him out there with all three. So he gives Vrabel an interesting piece of the puzzle, and something that the Titans haven't had since really, you know, the days of Kyle Vandenbosch.
Yeah, Harold Landry was definitely an intriguing prospect who fell to the second round, especially with that injury concern. But there's been a lot of guys as of late in drafts. Miles Jack is the first one that comes to mind for me, that everybody kind of gets scared of these injuries, and they end up playing, and they usually play fine. So if Harold Landry ends up panning out health-wise, then that'll probably be a steal for the Titans so far. But, yeah, that'll definitely be interesting to see how he goes up against this Jaguars O-line. One thing that I'm kind of looking for is seeing how the Jaguars' passing attack can continue against this Titans secondary. With the additions of Malcolm Butler, they have Logan Ryan. You have guys in the back like Kevin Byard, who is one of the top in his position. So it'll be really interesting to see how this Jaguars passing attack can kind of continue to see if it can function against a better secondary that they faced, I think, all year. I think this was probably the best secondary that they face in these first 3 weeks.
Well, I'll tell you, Malcolm Butler, the Titans never really spend up and pay for guys in free agency. They spin up there, and you know, it's kind of a risk considering how it went down in New England. Through the first segment of the season, he hasn't been very good. He gave up a long touchdown in the preseason to Devontae Adams. Gave up another one last week to Will Fuller. So it's a problem. That deep ball is a problem. I think he gave up one to Kenny Stills as well. So that's 3 deep balls right there. You know, immediately my eyes go to D.D. Westbrook and Keelan Cole. So if Blake Bortles can stretch the field vertically, there may be some opportunities there. On the other side of the ball, Adoree Jackson is playing really well. I think he's developed into a nice cornerback one in this league. Got his first career pick last week. And I don't know if y'all saw it, but really jumped up and ended a seam route and got the pick. So that was nice to see. You know, the Titans are pretty solid everywhere else. But right now, it's kind of odd to say, but the big ticket addition in free agency, Malcolm Butler, is the weak link.
Now, how has the other former Patriots cornerback, this one being Logan Ryan, performed as he's in his second year in the Titans system?
Logan Ryan's okay. He works primarily out of the nickel. You're not going to see him play anything else. He's just been okay. There's not a lot to say about him. He kind of started like Malcolm Butler did last year, giving up a big touchdown in New York in a preseason game. He's very beatable. I think he's kind of an average corner, but considering what the Titans had 2 years ago, that's a huge upgrade over, you know, Bryce McCain, Parrish Cox, and an old Jason McCourty. So he's okay for what he is. He's nothing special, nothing to fear out there, but he'll be working out of the nickel on Sunday.
Now, from a Titans perspective, I'll just give me one player on either side of the ball that you, I guess, have to, you feel like would have to game plan the most against. Who are you kind of fearing going into this week three matchup? Just give me a one, or maybe a personnel group, or just one player on the other side of the ball.
On Jacksonville side?
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I think I've already mentioned Keelan Cole. I'm telling you, man, speed against the Titans, it's been a thing. And like I said with Malcolm Butler, that's been an issue there. So, you know, I see some size there. I see some speed there. That's a spot where Jacksonville can win. So I'm interested to see if they don't, you know, throw Adoree Jackson, kind of start shadowing the other team's best receiver. Cause like I said, he's been really good. So, that's where I'm looking there. Defensively, man, it's hard to narrow it down. You know, Jacksonville has so many pieces on defense. I think I'd have to point to the defensive line group as a whole because Tennessee's really banged up. You know, Taylor Lewan had a concussion in week one. He still hasn't been fully cleared. He did practice today. Jack Conklin is still limited. He tore his ACL in the playoffs. He's still working back from that. And then reserve offensive lineman Dennis Kelly missed last game. He was in the hospital with an illness. So you're down to playing guards in the tackle spots. So it's kind of a mess right now. It totally transformed the game plan last week. You saw a lot of quick throws, you know, as they were kind of trying to hide Blaine Gabbert. So, yeah, it'd be offensive line for me.
You mentioned Blaine Gabbert, and I think that's a big storyline for this game, mainly because of it being a game against the Jaguars. So how did he perform last week in his first start as a Titan? And what's the latest buzz around the quarterback situation in terms of Mariota's health and what they're going to do going forward?
Well, Blaine didn't turn the ball over. So that's really all that we can ask. He threw for 117 yards. The game plan was very conservative. A lot of screen passes, a lot of quick throws. You saw him actually have some pretty good chemistry with Corey Davis. He'd throw to a spot and Davis would be there, which hasn't always been the case with Marcus Mariota. But nothing down the field at all. So very conservative. He was okay. He didn't lose the game. Marcus has a nerve issue in his elbow that's affecting his ability to grip the football. And obviously it's his throwing hand, so that's a big problem. He said today it's slowly coming back, but clearly he's not 100%. Vrabel would not commit to any sort of statement saying he would play. I'll just tell you, my gut feeling is that he'd be out on Sunday. I think they're going to take it really slow, especially considering they got the win last week. That kind of eases some pressure not to fall 0-3. So I'd be surprised at this point. Again, a lot can change. It's only, Wednesday night. But I'd be surprised if he played on Sunday.
Now, I'll keep it on the offensive side of the ball for the Titans here. The injury report came out today, and if I remember correctly, I saw Derrick Henry was on there. Yes, that's right. He was limited with a back injury. Now, the Titans did bring in Deion Lewis this past offseason. He's, I dare to say, probably the complete opposite of what Henry is as a back when you look at them like in a vacuum. So in term, not even with just the potential of Henry being limited or maybe even out this weekend, what has Lewis offered that kind of gives this offense like some variety? And like, what can people expect out of him if he's going to be the lead back in any future scenario where Henry may not be able to give it a go?
Well, first off, I don't think the Henry issue is a big deal. But second off, I think Deion Lewis is a better back overall. It's just Derrick Henry is kind of a slower guy and not very gifted laterally. He's really unique. You know, he's 6'3", 250, but he won't run anybody over. He's kind of like a 6'3", 250-pound Chris Johnson, if that makes any sense at all. I know it probably doesn't. But, yeah, he's a home run hitter. So Deion Lewis gives you some of that lateral ability. Really good in between the tackles. Even though he's a smaller guy, you know, you really wouldn't expect that. But there was a portion of the Dolphins game where they just handed it to Deion Lewis up the middle, and he made it happen, you know, 5 yards at a time. So I think the Titans offense is better, honestly, with Deion Lewis in the backfield. Gives you so much more in the passing game, too. The only hold up with him is his size and you know, the tendency to get dinged up. So I don't think they can use Deion in a full role. You know, there's a reason they're still giving Derrick Henry 15 carries a game. So together, I think they form a nice backfield. But, you know, if I had to pick one, it would be Deion Lewis.
Now, last year, you guys drafted probably one of my favorite wide receivers in the entire draft, and being Tywan Taylor. Can you just tell me how kind of Tywan's been? I know he had a touchdown last week. How has he been in this offense so far?
It's been a slow go for Taywan. He couldn't pick the offense up, first of all, last year. At least that's what kind of the feel that we got. This year, he was a training camp superstar. You know, you saw the practice highlights every day, and he was just roasting people deep. You know, Matt LaFleur coming over from the Rams, there was some buzz saying that he was going to be the Sammy Watkins of this offense. We haven't seen that yet. You know, he didn't play a lot in week one with Marcus Mariota. Dropped a touchdown pass actually in his lone attempt, but he's been all right so far. I'd like to see him get more snaps, but it just seems like there's been some difficulty picking up the offense. But I think it'll come in time, because honestly, the Titans don't have too much of anything better ahead of him on the depth chart.
You can go ahead, and Chris, because I need to pull up a quote from Doug Marrone. That can kind of be what we finish off Titans talk with.
All right, so with Delanie Walker out for the year, who has kind of stepped up in that tight end role, or has anybody really been able to kind of fill those shoes of Delanie Walker? I know he's a damn good tight end, so it's kind of asking for a lot, but has there been really anybody that's kind of really stepped up, or is it kind of like a committee of tight ends at this point?
Well, I think, you know, I'm going to lean towards more of a committee, but we haven't seen it yet. You know, I said Blaine threw for 117 yards last week, so we didn't get to see much of the passing game. But when it happens, I think it's going to be Jonnu Smith, a guy that was taken in the third round 2 years ago, a guy that moves like a wide receiver, pretty good with the ball in his hands. Only problem with him is he's not a great blocker, and Delanie was just good at everything he did. So, you know, you're going to have to throw him out in some tough situations where he might not be comfortable sealing that edge. So I'm interested to see what they do there, because I still don't know. We've only had one game since Delanie's absence. But if it's going to be anybody, it's going to be Jonnu Smith. I just don't know if he's ready for the all-around game.
Now, this will probably be the last thing I have in terms of trying to get to understand this Titans team, unless Chris has anything else. Today in Doug Marrone's press conference, he was praising Mike Vrabel. Just from when Marrone was with the Jets, he said that Vrabel was still playing at the time with the Patriots, and they had a lot of respect for him there. And then when he was coaching in Houston, he got to know him through Bill O'Brien, because he's very close with Bill O'Brien, and just really seems to respect Vrabel a lot. In terms of how the team has changed under Vrabel in comparison to the Malarkey era, like what's different about this team? Not even as much like, you know, maybe the culture changing and stuff, but the different types of things you're seeing schematically. With the defense, obviously you've got a former NFL linebacker, so you've got someone that really understands the ins and outs of actually being out there on the playing field. So is he bringing some variance to this defense? And then I guess also as well with the culture of the team, like what's changed?
Well, schematically, it's hard to say because we're so early into it. I don't think the offense, and the offense is Matt LaFleur's baby, so it really hasn't gotten off the ground yet with the Marcus injury. But really, the only thing that's really changed so far is Mike Vrabel on the field coaching. He's practicing with these guys. I mean, he's taking reps against Taylor Lewan today. He's trying to get, you know, rush around Taylor Lewan because he's still in concussion protocol. So he's really hands-on. I think that gives a different perspective and a different level of respect. You know, you just see the locker room video that the Titans posted after the win on Sunday. There's just a level of respect there. You know, he's only, what, 43 years old? So he's only been out of the league for a few years. So I think there's a relationship there. You know, he gets what these guys are going through. But again, as far as X and O's, I haven't really seen that. Maybe that's a question I can answer when we talk again during the second matchup.
All right, so then that should just about do it for our segment. For the second half of the show, we will be switching over. We'll be the guests with Locked On Titans, so be sure to listen to that as we kind of give our perspective for stuff that they might want to see on the Jaguars side of the ball. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice. Usually, it's what team to bet on this week. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win. But if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. That's why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, guys, they're your best bet this season. They've been in the business for years, have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game, live betting, over-unders on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to give everyone the best service possible. If you're willing to deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern Time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate this offer. Visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. If you're willing to hold out until 7 p.m., you get an extra $25 free play by using promo code LOCKEDON and add 25 at the end of it. If it's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner to take extra money. You play, you win, you get paid.
We are back with the co-host from Locked On Jaguars. Thanks for joining us today, guys.
Appreciate you having us on.
Yeah, man. Let's start off with the biggest news of the day. Big injury from last week's game. Cam Robinson is going to be down. How in the world are the Jaguars going to replace such an important player to the offense?
With a guy that gave up 7 pressures in 3 quarters. So the Jaguars are bringing in Josh Wells to be the left tackle for the rest of the year. The team has been vocally supportive of Wells. This is his 5th year with the team after going undrafted and signing in 2014. He's played in, I think, 34 games as a Jag. He's filled in as a reserve a lot as a spot starter. And he's always struggled as a pass protector when he's on an island, when he's taking one-on-one battles, especially against speed rushers. He does not win. He gets lost. But he's a solid run blocker. He's a guy that they consider cheap labor. He's on like a 2-year, $1.3 million contract. So they know that they can keep him around, pay him next to nothing, and get a guy that they're comfortable with at this point just because they've had him for so long and developed him. So when Fournette is back out on the field, when they're trying to run the ball, like, Wells is going to be totally fine. And you're not going to see too much, you know, drop off from when Cam was out there, because Cam isn't the greatest run blocker, But while he might be better than Wells, the offensive line as a whole is so good, especially in run blocking, that you won't see too much of a drop off. And if the offensive line to where the interior is kind of shuffling left to try and help in pass protection, Wells might be kind of shadowed there a little bit with the help of an Andrew Norwell helping take on some outside guys. But let's say you put Harold Landry one-on-one against Wells, and he like you've got Landry out there playing pretty much a seven technique going against Wells coming from the outside. Landry might have his breakout game. it very well might be the case.
That offensive line is going to be tasked with protecting Blake Bortles. He's an interesting guy. I mean, just from an outsider, you know, the rap on him is he's terrible, but every time I watch the Jaguars play, he's just making weird plays with his legs and keeping the offense just kind of afloat. How's his development going? Is he developing, or is he just kind of what he is right now?
Blake Bortles is an enigma that I don't think we can ever solve. Rookie year, comes in, plays half the year because Chad Henne is bad. Comes in, kind of has an average rookie year. I don't know the stats off the top of my head. And then his next year in 2015 really lights it up. A lot of people credit the garbage time, which is fake news. A lot of it was actually when the Jaguars were within 7 points of the lead. Lights it up, has 35 touchdowns, 18 interceptions, something like that. And then the next year he regresses, and he regresses hard. The Jaguars team is abysmal. There's no wins going basically anywhere. I think they end up with like 3. Then last year happens. The Jaguars get their defense, finally emerges. Saxonville is born. Guys like Calais Campbell, A.J. Bouye come in and really kind of change things. The Jaguars go all the way to the AFC Championship game on the shoulders of Blake Bortles. Some people are starting, and then they lose to the Patriots, even though Bortles was phenomenal in December through the playoffs. People are wondering, was Bortles just riding this defense, or is he actually good? Nobody knows. Then this year happens, preseason goes by, Blake Bortles has a rough preseason, everybody starts to panic. And then Blake Bortles comes out and has the performance of his career against the Patriots week 2, passing for 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and for did he hit 400 yards? Yeah, I think he hit like just – was he just under 300, Zach, or was he just over 4?
I can't remember.
I think he was like I think he was like 388, so almost 400 yards. He seems to be trending in the right direction, seems to finally have confidence again. So I would like to say that he's trending upward from last year, but his whole career has just been kind of like a roller coaster of emotions. And if you're following the trend, he should be on a down year, but so far he's still going up. So I'm going to stick with that he's improving, but he's such his confidence, I think, kind of wavers if he starts to do bad. So it's just really, really interesting to watch.
Yeah, and his receiving core is actually pretty nice. The Jaguars have a find in Keelan Cole, who went nuts last week. Dede Westbrook is there. We talked about on Locked On Jaguars, the Titans struggling with the deep ball and Malcolm Butler. Are the Jaguars one to attack deep, or are they giving Cole and Dede Westbrook looks deep down the field?
I think it'll just really depend on if Hackett wants to be creative. He can be creative, that being the Jaguars offensive coordinator. If he wants to just pound the ball with Leonard Fournette, then he's going to do that. Both of them can be effective. I don't understand why they can't try to mesh both and kind of synchronize it to keep defenses on their toes. Because they've shown that when Fournette isn't able to play, that if they want to hit, like, either take advantage of the underneath game and spread the ball out to guys like Austin Seferian Jenkins, Dede Westbrook, even Dante Moncrief a little bit, they're able to do it. Or they could hit Keelan Cole deep and make these big plays with a speedster like him going and making plays down the field. Like, they're showing that they can do it. So it's just a question on whether or not they want to be like stubborn in what their play calling and what their philosophy is, or if they're realizing that, hey, Bortles is kind of hot right now. Mix that in with how Fournette was looking before he suffered the hamstring injury. And I truly think this offense needs to start finding ways to be kind of unpredictable with when they're going up against opposing defenses and to keep them on their toes. Because no one at this point, I mean, I can't remember the last time that the Jaguars were able to make teams respect both the pass and the run. It's always been one way or another, or quite frankly, for a nice amount of time during my fandom, it was teams respected neither. So we'll just have to see how they plan to attack it this upcoming week with Fournette back. I say if it isn't broke, don't fix it at this point. So although you're getting Fournette back, I do want to see them continue to utilize the pass game like they did against New England.
That was back from my next question. The Titans have been pretty banged up early on, and now Jacksonville's pretty banged up, at least in the backfield. You said Fournette's probably going to be able to go. What about T.J. Yeldon?
Going by the injury report, he didn't leave the game during the Patriots game with injury, and he's listed on the injury report with an ankle injury. I think it might just be precautionary. I don't see anything or haven't heard anything leading to believe that he would miss this game. So as an early week guess, I would say that he's probably good to go, but obviously the teams can be weird with their injury reports. One day they're kind of limited, and next thing you know, they're out. So right now, my gut's telling me that he'll probably play, but that doesn't mean he can't either hurt it more in practice or the team holds him out for precautionary reasons with Fournette likely being back.
All right, last question. We've got to talk about that defense because it's ridiculous. It seems like every time I put on a Jaguars game, that defense is changing the game. I know I flipped on or I saw it on Red Zone, the Giants game. You know, they needed a play, and they get a big defensive touchdown. Just talk a little bit about how that defense operates and how clutch they've been over the past year or so.
I mean, if Chris wants to add anything to this, he can. People have already started to wonder where the sacks are. Because at this point last year, what I think they had 10 sacks the first game, and I think they had 4 in their second. So they're at 14 sacks through 2 games, and this year they're at 4. However, unless you have Pro Football Focus premium stats, you wouldn't know that they have 38 pressures on 65 dropbacks. So they're putting pressure on the quarterback, and that's something that isn't going to stop. And what's most impressive about that is they really don't use too many packages where they're blitzing. They genuinely send 4-man packages like on the majority of their pass rush snaps. That's just how they operate because they've got the guys there to where that they don't need to send more. Teams need to respect just the 4 they have up front because they know they're going to find a way to get to the quarterback. And one thing that I've always kind of found myself, you know, talking about with this Jaguars pass defense is that the secondary and pass rush really can kind of bounce off of each other. The pass rush can either get in there and make a play to the point where a quarterback will be forced into throwing and what could end up being an interception or a big play by the secondary because they were panicked into throwing something that they normally wouldn't need to, but this pass rush got there so quickly. Or the secondary can cause a coverage sack. Like, it can go either way, just depending on what Todd Wash has lined up, the personnel he puts out there. They truly can scheme things to where it can go one way or the other. That's just how talented as a whole that this pass defense is.
And I think the Jaguars kind of really get home with their sacks. I mean, they only have 4 throughout the year, but I tell you what, when they have a corner blitz with DJ Hayden, I feel like they've always been pretty successful. Last year when they had Colvin, he would kind of get home every once in a while, but the Jags, like Zach was saying, don't seem to send a whole lot of blitzing packages. They kind of just run with those 4. And then sometimes Todd Wash, the defensive coordinator, will throw in a quick corner blitz. And usually DJ Hayden gets there or has enough pressure on the quarterback to force a play. So we saw it last week against Tom Brady. DJ Hayden was able to collect a sack. So I think really if you're going to look for sacks outside of just the standard 4-man pressure, look for a corner blitz.
All right, guys, good stuff. Great insight. You know, Titans-Jaguars is always fun. Sunday should be no different.
Thanks for listening to another Locked On crossover event between the Locked On Jaguars podcast and the Locked On Titans podcast. As always, follow myself on Twitter at MistoCristofo, and my co-host Zach Goodall at Zach_Goodall, both on Twitter, as well as the Locked On Jaguars handle at Locked On Jaguars. Be sure to leave ratings and reviews if you like the show or if there's something that you'd like us to change on anywhere that you can leave a review. And also feel be sure to subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Megaphone, anywhere really you can get a podcast, you could probably find us. So be sure to subscribe. That way you never miss an episode and leave those ratings and reviews.